Troy Weaver has had three NBA drafts now to his name as the Detroit Pistons GM. Which NBA draft was his best one? We'll talk about that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. You can find me over on Twitter, at Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel, at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast. Or if you listen to this on one of the podcast platforms, go down below and leave a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this to. That's another great way to support the podcast. So, like I mentioned, we're going to be talking about the three NBA drafts that Troy Weaver has had as the Detroit Pistons GM, and we'll talk about which one was the best one. Also, we have some news about, obviously, NBA news with Kevin Durant, and it seems like he's going to be asking out. He actually is going to be having his trade request granted, I should say, by the Brooklyn Nets. We'll twist that into a Pistons-centric topic and ask what the Pistons have to do to avoid getting themselves in a situation like we've seen with the Brooklyn Nets, the New Orleans Pelicans, the Houston Rockets over the last few years where superstars are demanding out. And then also we got some news with some former players possibly becoming assistant coaches for the Detroit Pistons. We'll talk about all those things in today's podcast. But first, I have to tell you guys that we have a special guest. Obviously, you guys are very aware of this guest. He's on, what seems like, all the time. Bryce Simon, host of the Pistons Pulse podcast. Bryce, thank you for coming on, man. The Pistons, obviously, Troy Weaver, like we just mentioned, he's had three NBA drafts. We have 2020 with Killian Hayes, Isaiah Stewart, Sadiq Bey, and Saben Lee. We have 2021 with, obviously, Cade Cunningham and Isaiah Livers. And then this past NBA draft where he got Jaden Ivey, Jalen Duren, and Gabriel Proceda. Which draft do you believe is his best draft thus far as the Pistons GM?
So I think the best draft, it's probably the easiest, right, Koo, because he just didn't mess it up and he took Cade Cunningham, number one, and he didn't overthink it. But I think it's not just Cade. We've talked about this. I'm super high on Isaiah Livers. So I think that 2021 draft was really, really big for him. And I think that may be the one that reaps the most reward. But I will say this. I think both the 2020 draft and the 2022, he did a really good job of, as a GM, of navigating those drafts and getting the players he liked. Like, I think a lot of people didn't like the Isaiah Stewart pick in 2020, and he ended up looking like he was probably right on that, whether Stewart gets the three-point shot or not. Like, he's been a good NBA player. And then this past year in 2022, Jaden Ivey fell to him, but getting Jalen Duren at number 13, the way he navigated all of that was really good as well. So I think overall the most talented, or the one that's going to make the biggest impact, I think is probably 2021, but he did a lot of good things in both drafts.
So I told Bryce before we recorded that I wanted him to have his own definition of what best was, because I was going to take my definition of best, and it was going to be, it may be a little different from a lot of you guys listening's definition. So like Bryce said, I think the quickest and easiest answer would probably be 2021, simply because you got Cade Cunningham. You got your franchise player. But as we've talked about in the podcast before, and Bryce kind of hit on it a little bit just now, you just didn't have to mess that up. Like, you got the number one overall pick. You have the selection of anyone you wanted. Cade Cunningham should have been the clear number one. I remember Bryce and me on the podcast during that offseason. We were on here every day. Just take Cade. Cade is the pick. Just don't make this hard. Don't overthink it. It's Cade Cunningham. Just take it. Like, it was a very easy selection. So while he was obviously the best talent, I don't know if I would call it the best draft, because a lot of that had to do with luck and obviously just getting the number one overall pick. So the draft class that I'm actually going to pick as his best draft class thus far, and no, it's not Killian Hayes' draft class, for all of you guys out there who think I'm going to be biased, it's this past draft, I think, was his best draft.
Okay.
So, and my reasoning for it is, And you, again, Bryce kind of hit on it a little bit, but I'll dive a little further into it. It was the way he went about this draft. It was the way he got the picks in this draft. It's the way he maneuvered everything. Again, we talked about this a lot right after he did the draft, and we went live on the channel, on the Locked On Pistons YouTube channel, and I was raving and giving Troy Weaver his flowers because, you know, we were sitting here wondering what's Jeremy Grant going to turn into. And Jeremy Grant, at the time, before the draft happened, it was basically a late-round, first-round pick. And everyone, you know, we were on the podcast, and a lot of people talking, well, you know, Jeremy Grant's value just wasn't that high, yada, yada, yada. He was never
going to get a high pick. In 2025, Koo. It was a 2025 late-round pick, not even this season.
Correct. So it was like, see, I told you, blah, blah. His value wasn't that high, all that kind of stuff. But it looks like Troy Weaver was able to still find a way to get that future first-round pick, take that cap space that he freed up, and he made this decision on draft night, basically to forego the DeAndre Ayton sweepstakes. And this was before the whole crazy stuff happened with Miles Bridges. But at that time, you know, he said no to Miles Bridges, DeAndre Ayton, all those guys in free agency. And he said, you know what? We're going to turn this cap space that we just got from this Jeremy Grant trade, this future first round pick, and we're going to flip it into taking a bunch of expiring contracts, which what Nerlens Noel and Alec Burks is basically it are because they got a team option the second year. And we'll take on Kemba Walker's deal as well. Kick the can down the road a little bit so where we have that cap flexibility to make trades this year and have as much cap space as we want the next year still to make moves that we want next season while also obtaining a pick to get one of their top guys. And we talked about this. I told you guys I was hearing this before that Jalen Duren was one of their top prospects in the entire draft. And they were able to get him at 13 while also taking the road of we're going to give this young core another year to develop and grow together, and then we'll make our real decision next season on what we're going to do. And obviously getting Jaden Ivey at number 5, him slipping to 5 when a lot of people thought he'd go at least in the top 4. All of that combined and how Troy Weaver went about those things, I think has to make 2022 his best draft, in my opinion, simply because of how it went down, all the things that went into it, all not just the selections themselves, but everything that was a result of the selections and of the moves he made, what it signaled that he was trying to do moving forward and what they're going to do now.
Yeah, the only thing that I'll nitpick the 2022 draft, and I've said this before, is I didn't like the draft pick of Gabriel Prashida. It sounds like maybe they were trying to not even make that selection, and it was because the roster spots. But now they have what? They have 17 guaranteed contracts, I believe, Koo, as we sit here today, not counting the two ways of, obviously, of Buddy Boeheim and Braxton Key. And so why not take Jaden Hardy? Like, it looks like they're going to move on from Saben Lee anyway. So I still don't love that pick, although I do think Prashida may have a chance down the road. But it seems like those things don't pan out, you know, those draft and stash things as much as maybe what we want to believe as fans. What I'm really interested in, Koo, is how much intel did he have to know that Jalen Duren was going to fall to number 13? Like, we know he loved him. There's no doubt about that. There's so much talk about the fact that he was actually in play at number 5 that obviously Troy Weaver loved Jalen Duren. I would love to know the stories. Did he try to move into number 8? Did he try to move into number 10? Or did he play the draft boards perfect and just know that he can make the move at number 13 and select his guy? And that's what's incredible. I think Troy Weaver probably got 2 of his top 5-6 guys on his big board. I have no firsthand knowledge of that. I'm just speculating completely. But I think he got 2 of his favorite players in the draft. And I think he may be just as high on Jalen Duren as he was on Jaden Ivey.
Yeah, very well could be, man. So all those things that we mentioned, that's why I would pick 2022. Again, I understand why everyone would pick 2021. It's quite obvious, Cade Cunningham. So that's the easy. And Isaiah Livers, that's not poo-poo Isaiah Livers. That also was a really good pick. But obviously the big winner there is Cade Cunningham. I will say this about the 2020 draft. It was an aggressive draft from Troy Weaver. And that kind of signaled the way we were going to see the Pistons handled in the future, in the coming years, is that Troy Weaver was going to be very aggressive. He was going to go after the players he wanted. He wasn't going to be shy about it. He went up and got Isaiah Stewart. He went up and got Sadiq Bey. Those 2 picks, especially Sadiq at 19, look like they're going to be really good picks. And even if Isaiah Stewart only ends up being a backup big, getting that at 16 is really good value, in my opinion. So those are 2 good picks to get. 2020 really relies on Killian Hayes. If Killian Hayes is able to hit at 7, if Killian's able to do what I believe he can do this season, then I think that one has an argument to be the best draft class, because then you're talking about hitting on all 3 of your first-round picks, and all 3 of your first-round picks in your very first draft having a key role on your team's future. If that's the case, I think 2021 or 2020 wins simply because of the sheer number of first-round picks that could have hit. But outside of that, I think it's 2022.
Yeah, I mean, I think if Killian Hayes even ends up being a really good second unit point guard, which, again, we don't have to get into this conversation today. Obviously, yes, you could have drafted Tyrese Halliburton, and then would you have got – like, we can get into all of that stuff. At the end of the day, if Killian Hayes being is part of the, like, two-deep rotation, the 10-man rotation or 8-man rotation, that still isn't a bad draft. If you look through this coup – Hayes, Stewart, Bay, Cade, Livers, Ivy, Durin, that's seven dudes who legit might could be in your 10-man rotation over the next 2, 3, 4 years. Like, legit, I think Pistons fans could think that those guys are all in the rotation. Now, maybe eventually you have to package a few of those to go get a second star, depending on how you feel about ceilings and how guys progress. But I would say those are successful drafts in general, Koo. There's not a whole lot of misses there. You know, Bolsa and Luka late in the second is kind of whatever. Saben Lee looks like he may flame out. Like, you know, you hit on one of – in 3 years, you hit on one second-round pick who's going to be part of your rotation. I would assume that's a decent hit rate. I don't know, but I would assume so.
Yep, I completely agree with you. So let me know what you guys think in the comment section down below. Oh, go ahead, Bryce. You have one more thing?
No, I have one more question because you brought up Ayton, Brunson, and Bridges. So I've really wanted to get into this. Do you think it was his plan all along not to get involved with those guys? Or do you think once the offseason started, he got intel that said the Suns are going to match DeAndre Ayton? Like, what happened? Jalen Brunson's going to the Knicks. Like, what happened? And then obviously the unfortunate, you know, scenario around Miles Bridges and obviously his, you know, domestic stuff and, you know, all prayers to, you know, everything going on there with his wife or girlfriend. But do you think that was his plan? Obviously, the Bridges thing you couldn't anticipate. Was that his plan with Ayton and Brunson? Or do you think circumstances dictated and he had to change course?
I think he 100% had intel because we even were hearing about the Jalen Brunson stuff during the season with New York. A lot of people were poo-pooing it. I remember getting into some arguments on Twitter with some fans and some other people in the Pistons community saying, well, you know, the Knicks don't have enough cap space. How are they going to do this? How are they going to do that? And it was rumored for a long time that they were going to try and away to get Brunson, and they sure heck they did it. So I wouldn't be shocked if other teams were hearing about that. I wouldn't be shocked if Troy Weaver knew that as well. With DeAndre Ayton, I think he found out somehow, some way at that time, like not a long time ago, like probably, I wouldn't be surprised if it was like the week of the draft, because there was a lot of rumors heating up that they were cleaning up space to go after DeAndre Ayton. And obviously on draft night, it seemed like he just completely said goodbye to that. And obviously the Suns went on to match a contract with DeAndre. And I think he had to have had a feeling. I feel like if he thought that DeAndre Ayton would not have been matched, I think maybe DeAndre Ayton's a Piston right now. But I think he probably knew that the Suns were going to match, and he said, screw it, I have another route that I probably like just as good. I'm going to go down that route instead.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've just seen people be like, see, I told you so. I knew that the Pistons weren't actually interested in Ayton. I'm like, do we know the Pistons weren't interested in DeAndre Ayton? Or were they interested in DeAndre Ayton and Troy Weaver just found out, okay, this is a waste of my time. Like he fully bought in that they were going to match, which ended up happening. Like it didn't cost the Pacers a lot. I do think it's funny they waived Dwayne Washington Jr. and now Dwayne Washington Jr. is actually on the Suns. They yeah. waived him to make the offer sheet to DeAndre Ayton. And then now that's where he ended up. But, you know, I would love to know those little nuanced things. We talked about the draft with Jalen Duren and then just the offseason plan. I know you have all these different ways you know the offseason can go, but I just wonder, like, what was plan A? What was the perfect offseason for Troy Weaver? And, like, I would love to know if it was Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren and then these, you know, bad, quote-unquote, bad contracts or expiring contracts.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he absolutely had intel somehow that DeAndre Ayton, or at least had a feeling that DeAndre Ayton would get matched, and that's why he backed out of that. But let me know what you guys think about which draft class is the best one that Troy Weaver has had thus far. Is it 20? Is it 21? Is it 22? Let me know in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kuka Hill. When we come back, we'll talk about some of the stuff going on with KD and the Nets and how the Pistons can watch these scenarios, these situations play out, and how they can avoid and stay away from this kind of thing happening with their franchise and their stars. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, I have to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, Built Bar. If you haven't tried Built Bar Puffs yet, you are depriving yourself of one of life's greatest joys. And guess what? There's a brand new flavor, as usual. Ready? It's delicious, indulgent cookie dough covered in chocolate. That's right, Built has done it again. Let me introduce you to their new favorite, cookie dough chunk puffs. Have a light and chewy texture, real cookie dough chunks, and of course, they're covered in 100% real chocolate. All of the joys of eating cookie dough without the hassle of having to make it. Plus, it's healthy for you. Cookie dough chunk puffs are only 160 calories and they have a whopping 15 grams of protein in them. Run to Built.com to snag a box for you and the family. It will be the perfect treat. Or you can find a really good hiding place in your house and just hoard them for yourself, although I do not recommend you do that. Like all Built Bars, the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff are covered in 100% real chocolate. That means they're healthy and tasty. Chocolate-covered cookie dough with light, fluffy texture tastes so good. And what's great about Built is that all of their bars are great, are made with great collagen protein, which your body absorbs more efficiently and provides tons of health benefits. Eat something that tastes good and is good for you. You're going to love the new Cookie Dough Chunk Puff. Whether you need a snack for your workout or a late-night treat, just grab a quick bite. Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. Ditch the calories, the fat, and all the sugar. Grab yourself a Built bar today. Go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Again, go to Built.com. Use promo code LOCK15 and get 15% off your order. Built Bar, the best tasting protein bar ever. So I want to thank you guys again for making Lockdown Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Lockdown Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast. Or go to whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. Go down below, leave a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, Bryce. So this is a Pistons podcast, but I think every Pistons fan or anybody listening to this podcast or anyone watching NBA basketball is aware of what's going on with KD and the Brooklyn Nets. KD essentially has requested a trade. I believe that was like a month and a half ago he did that. They've been kind of, you know, dragging their feet. Doesn't seem like they really want to trade him. And he just had a meeting, I believe like an hour before this podcast, before we started recording this podcast, it came out that him and Josai, the owner of the Brooklyn Nets, had a meeting, and KD basically said, listen, I want out, or you're going to get rid of the GM and the head coach, and I'll stay. So you pick either me or you get rid of everyone, and I get to pick basically who I want to take care of the team as a GM and who gets to coach the team, even though it seems like that they did that already with Steve Nash, him, and Kyrie, but nonetheless.
Didn't they handpick Steve Nash?
Yeah. It's crazy. It's a crazy-ass storyline. Definitely is. But so me and Bryce are going to give our opinions of what's going on with that, but also within those opinions, what can the Pistons do to avoid having situations like that where their stars are not only just asking out, but it seems like are just burning the franchise down on the way out. You saw it with, it seems like it's happening with KD and Kyrie in Brooklyn. You saw it with New Orleans and Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis basically screwed up every relationship he had in New Orleans with the way they handled it. And then also James Harden basically showed up. People said that he showed up to training camp fat, showed up the regular season fat, purposely threw games just to get out, and then got back in shape, which seems like hurt him because he ended up having multiple injuries since then because he's been out of shape. So there's other situations too. Bryce is going to bring up something really interesting with the CBA. I'm sure that's going to be interesting for you guys to hear. But Bryce, just what's your opinion on everything going on with KD and the Nets? I know it's a Pistons podcast, but I know all of us are super interested with that. And then with the Pistons observing that, what can they do to avoid having these situations play out in Detroit in the future?
Well, I mean, it affects the Detroit Pistons, right? They're an Eastern Conference team. I think it affects the Pistons in terms of, like, I think the Pistons are in a race against the Magic, the Thunder, the Rockets, as like these young rebuilding teams. If the Nets suck, Koo, that's really good for the Rockets because of that James Harden trade, because they have all those picks. So it does kind of play a factor with the Detroit Pistons. Let me just read the Nets roster to you, Koo. And if I told you every one of these guys was going to be healthy and in the right frame of mind to play basketball this season, I want you to tell me where this team would rank in the NBA. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Ben Simmons, Joe Harris, Royce O'Neal, Nick Claxton, Seth Curry, Patty Mills, Cam Thomas, TJ Warren. If that team is like, if everybody, and I'm not here, I didn't want that to come off the wrong, I'm not here to judge Ben Simmons. Like, if he has real stuff going on, then he needs to get his stuff right, and all respect and prayers up to him as well. But if that roster is fully healthy, you know, mind, body, everything else, that's a really good team, no?
Yep. One of the top teams in the East, I'd say. Top three teams. Top three,
I mean,
four
Kevin
teams.
Kevin Durant is unreal. Kyrie is unreal. I think Ben Simmons is an unreal basketball player when Ben Simmons is on the floor and playing basketball. And so that's the crazy part of all of this.
Yeah, I mean, and just to add on to what you're saying, just that I think that point right there is I think that's what kind of scares small market teams like the Pistons,
yes,
is the fact that you can have such a – it seems like – I mean, again – saying the right frame of mind isn't just about Ben Simmons. It's also about
the artist
that is Kyrie Irving. So there's a lot of things that go into that, but I'm sure a lot of small market teams are looking at the Nets and the Rockets and all these other teams that, I mean, the Pelicans maybe didn't do the best job, but either way, even with good teams surrounding them, even when it seems like you do the right things, these stars are still signing these extensions, getting their money, then asking out and getting out of there. And I'm sure teams like the Pistons are watching it like, this is tough.
Yeah, I mean, and so that's what we talked about, right? And this is the player empowerment. And I'm all for it. You know, like, I get it. I'm cool with it. But this is what you run into whenever they have this type of – we've seen it with LeBron James, right? LeBron James, the player, is arguably the greatest basketball player to ever walk the face of the earth. LeBron James, the GM, isn't that good, which is crazy to me. Like, how can you not understand the type of players you need around you? You need to put shooters around you, LeBron. But, like, the CBA almost encourages this, in my opinion, because what it does is you can pay your own players more, right? So you want the Detroit Pistons to be able to keep Cade Cunningham, right, whenever his contract comes up. So the Pistons will be able to offer Cade Cunningham more money than anybody else. Well, what do these players do now, Koo? Cade Cunningham takes the contract with the Pistons and then puts his hand on the table and says, I demand a trade. And that's what we're running into now. Now we don't have free agency. We have these guys taking the bag and saying, if I'm not happy here, if I don't like the coach, if I don't like my GM or my team or my ownership, I'll just demand a trade. And then what are they going to do about it? This will be very interesting what the Nets do if they go into the season, because I don't think they're going to get the return they want for Kevin Durant. Rudy Gobert completely screwed up the market.
Oh, yeah. Definitely did. He definitely did. And the CBA, I believe, is up in 2 years, right? Two years from now.
I'm very interested. This is going to be an interesting CBA, not to get it too much into the weeds, and I don't understand all of it. But in 2 years, you have this new TV deal coming in, and so that's going to reset things. And I'm interested to see if this is a topic of, okay, we did this to actually help teams retain their best players, but – I mentioned to you before the recording, I'm really interested to see what Bradley Beal does. Like, Bradley Beal saying all the right things that he wants to be at the... No, Bradley Beal wanted to take the biggest contract he possibly could, and that was with the Wizards. Is Bradley Beal demanding a trade by the NBA trade deadline? I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, man, it's honestly crazy. And you mentioned LeBron, obviously. LeBron started this player empowerment kind of thing. But even with LeBron, I would say, does it the right way. Because at least he honors the contracts that he signs. And then he goes in free agency. He goes to a new team. So if you want to do it that way, go ahead. At least he does it that way. A lot of these players, again, like you said, are signing these big extensions that, you know, the CBA kind of pushes you to do. It's supposed to help these small market teams. It ends up hurting them in the long run because these guys just sign the contract, take up the cap space, and then ask out. So it's tough. I'm interested to see what the Nets get back for KD, how this all goes down. But with the Pistons, how this affects the Pistons even more. You know, I think what you're seeing is that it's not just about anymore building a good team around your player. Like like we've said, a lot of these players have had good teams around them. Heck, the Nets have a good team around them. They have the coach that KD and Kyrie handpicked. They got their old coach fired because they weren't playing DeAndre Jordan, and they wanted DeAndre Jordan to play. Now DeAndre Jordan got waived because he wasn't good, and now he's gone. So it's like the Nets basically did everything that their stars wanted, and they're still going to get screwed. Like, so it's very it honestly is a very scary situation for a lot of small market teams to participate in. And I think what the Pistons need to see is, and how they can avoid that. One, I think Cade is a different type of player. But obviously, players mature. They change as they get older. Not saying Cade's going to become some scumbag or something. But, you know, players change as they get older. They get more mature. They start to grow into their own person, etc. So we'll see how it goes as he gets older. I don't think he's that type of player. But either way, I think the Pistons need to see that it's not just about creating a good team around them. You have to win. You have to win playoff games. And also, you have to create an environment that players want to be in. You have to create an environment that they're happy to be around, teammates they like playing with, coaching staff that they like playing for, a GM. Heck, I was listening to God, I forget whose podcast it was. I really liked it. I think it was the podcast with Duncan Robinson that he does. I forget whose it was, but I saw it on TikTok. I watched it all. I think it was Duncan Robinson's podcast. Either way, it was a player who was talking about that people don't understand how much the staff members of a franchise really affect like the environment and the daily how your daily work goes with the franchise. That kind of stuff has to hit when you fire a staff member, you fire just a facilities guy that the whole team really rocks with. That can kind of throw off a team's chemistry, throw off a team's environment. So I think the Pistons, we're kind of going to talk about that a little bit in the third segment. But I think that what the Pistons need to see is that it's not just about good teams. It is about winning. You have to win playoff games, not just regular season games. You need to win in the playoffs, but also you need to build a great environment from head to toe. When it goes from owner to GM to front office members to coaching staff to heck the ball boys to the training staff. Heck, I've seen so many players over the past year talk about how much the training staff people mean to them. How much former Piston Blake Griffin talked when he left. When he left Detroit, he said something about how he's really going to miss the training staff. And I was in the locker room for the 1920 season. They loved their training staff. Like, those guys were really tight. So, again, it's all those things. You have to hit on all those things and create an amazing team environment that guys love showing up to work to every single day. And I think that's, like, the best way to go about it. And even then, I have to be honest, it may not even work. But I think that gives you the best chance at doing it.
We've talked about this, you know, bringing it back to the Pistons. Derrick Rose went where? To the Knicks to play with Tubbs. Blake Griffin got bought out so he could go join whatever team he wanted. Jeremy Grant, from all reports, is boys with Damian Lillard. Jeremy Grant ended up with the Portland Trailblazers. To me, Troy Weaver understands this. Like, even little things. You know, Luka Garza shares the same agent as Jeremy Grant, and they're both from the DMV area. Like, even little things like that. Maybe, why are you wasting a second-round pick on Luka Garza? Well, you know, if they thought Jeremy Grant was going to be here long-term, if they thought they were going to have to negotiate a long-term deal with him at that time, drafting somebody else that his agent represents from the same area of the country may not be a bad idea. Sean Sweeney and Isaiah Stewart, you know, reportedly had a really, really good relationship. Obviously, he's with the Dallas Mavericks, you know, now. I wonder how much that affected Isaiah Stewart. I got to see this at Summer League. One of the Pistons PR guy, the guy that like brings them out to the media and then takes them back. I got a chance to watch him and Isaiah Stewart interact, and they're like, Stu and him are talking about their muscles, you know, because he's a jack dude, and you know, they're putting each other in headlocks and, you know, talking trash. It's like those little interactions, like you said, all the other people within the organization that, you know, most of us don't think about is important. And that starts with Weaver and Gores and Tellem and all those. They got to build that from the top down. And I feel like the Pistons are doing a good job of it right now.
Yeah, I do think so. I think the Pistons are actually acing that. I think they're doing a great job in creating a player-friendly environment, a players-first kind of environment where, again, they're looking after their players. They're doing right by their players, whether it's, like you said, trading them where they want to go, letting them go places they want to go, buying them out so they can then go to places they want to go. Like, all those things play, I think, a big factor. A lot of fans don't think about it. I get it. They don't think about it because it's not the players you're seeing every day. It's not the people you're hearing about every day. But I'm telling you right now, as someone who was around the team for the entirety of a season, the 1920 season, and listening to players having their own podcast talking about how important this stuff is, I'm telling you, this stuff is extremely important. And I think the Pistons are doing a good job of it. I think it's one of the best ways you can create an environment where stars not only want to come play for you, but want to stay and play with you for a long time. So I think it's big.
One thing, this is going to be very interesting to see how they treat somebody like Corey Joseph this season. And we don't know what the understandings are behind the scenes, right? Maybe Kojo knows. Him and Dwayne Casey, I would assume, have a really good relationship. What do they do with Nerlens Noel? That's going to be very interesting, right? They traded for Nerlens Noel. Do they treat him right? Do they give him playing time so they can trade him to a contender? You know, and you don't know the player's perspective. That's what's really hard with all this stuff. And Kelly Olynyk, I think they have three players on this year's roster where it's like, we all want to see the young guys, right, Koo? That's who we want to see play. We don't want to see minutes wasted on those guys. But Dwayne Casey, Troy Weaver, the organization may feel, you know, an obligation to do right by those guys, whether it's giving them time so that they can showcase their talents for another team or their next contract or whatever it is.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. We'll see how that all goes this upcoming season. And again, I'm going to hammer this home one more time. Just those guys, these people we're talking about that you guys don't hear about, I promise you guys, if you listen to any kind of player podcast and they talk about it, JJ Redick's talked about it a lot too on his podcast. Those guys matter a ton. They impact winning a lot. So the Pistons have to ace that kind of thing too, I'm telling you. When we come back, the Pistons are apparently signing, or it looks like they're going to be signing, a few former players to be assistant coaches on their coaching staff. We'll tell you which players these are and what this means for the Pistons, in our opinion. We'll talk about that when we come back. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. And if you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button. It's the best way to support the podcast or listen to one of the podcast platforms. Go down below, leave a 5-star review. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, Bryce. So in Summer League, the Pistons actually had a lot of former players on their coaching staff. Some of the names is obviously former Piston Jason Maxiel. They had Rashard Lewis. But now today, as of August 8th, Frank Isola tweeted out that it seems like the Pistons are going to be signing Keats Bogans to their coaching staff, and they're also in talks with Rashard Lewis to make him a part of their coaching staff as well. We've seen the Pistons over the last, I mean, if you go all the way back, I know there's probably a lot of former players they've had on the coaching staff over the years, but the first time I can remember it being a big deal was when they hired Rashid back in like 2013, whatever, to be on their coaching staff. But specifically this offseason, it looked like they made a concerted effort to get former players with their young core, with their coaching staff. They had a lot of them on their Summer League coaching staff, and it seems like Rashard Lewis's trial with the Summer League went really well. They're going to be bringing him onto the coaching staff. And also Keith Bogans. What do you think about all this, Bryce?
Well, my first thing was, did you find it interesting Isola was the guy that broke this news on Twitter?
Yep, definitely. What's, I was like, why is
what am I missing? What am I missing? Like, this is confusing to me that Isola was the guy. So I would love if somebody in the comments or on Twitter or whatever can let us know what the connection is. Maybe he has a connection with Bogans or whatever. I've never seen him break Pistons Twitter. And I don't want to say this isn't like big news, but it's not like they, you know, signed some big free agent or something. So I just thought that was nothing against Isola. I just thought it was interesting. I like this. I like bringing in players. I do think sometimes we think just because somebody played the game at a high level, they think, you know, that they're going to be a good coach. That's not always the case, right? Like, that's absolutely not always the case. Sometimes the best players make the worst coaches because I don't want to say things came easy to them, but they don't understand why can't you. I think we've talked about this before. I coach high school basketball. I let my assistants do the shooting stuff. I don't like to coach shooting. I'm like, just flick your wrist, just shoot it. Like, it's simple. Like, just shoot a basketball. I hate coaching the technical side of shooting because for me, it's just like I've shot a billion shots in my life and it's just second nature. And so I think sometimes it's hard for the great ones to do it. Keith Bogans was is it fair to say, just an average NBA player? Is that fair? Rashard Lewis, obviously a little bit better, was a two-time All-Star. I believe two-time All-Star, if I look here. So I do think guys in that realm seem to come into the NBA and be good assistant coaches. So I'm intrigued by this.
And for me, like you hit on it too. The fact that not every player, not every person that plays the game can coach the game, can talk about the game, all that stuff. We see that so many times. Just because you're good at something doesn't mean you can teach it, doesn't mean you can analyze it. So I think this says really good things about Rashard Lewis, is that obviously they really liked how he handled it and what he did in Summer League, obviously, if they wanted to bring him onto the coaching staff now. So I think that says great things about Rashard Lewis. Obviously says good things about Keith Bogans bringing him on. But this kind of goes back to the culture that I'm talking about with the Pistons that they're trying to build here. Again, if you listen to some of the former players podcast, they all talk about how they have a lot of respect for guys who didn't play and still talk and still coach the game and all that kind of stuff. But there is a different kind of relationship they can have with players who not only are former players that played the game, but also understand it and can break it down, analyze, and help coach you. And they can build relationships like that. And I know a lot of times you'll hear younger players, and a lot of younger players like looking up to guys who have went through it, who have went through the ups and downs, the trials and errors, all these kind of things, and can teach them through it and walk them through it by example, guys who did it themselves. So I think it's good for the culture as long as you get the right guys. That's the big thing. And I think, obviously, like we mentioned, there was Jason Mexio in the summer league. It's not to say Jason Mexio apparently was a bad coach or anything, but they put them through summer league. They wanted to see what they did there, and they obviously really liked what Richard Lewis did there, and now they're bringing them up to the coaching staff. Obviously, Keith Bogans as well. I like it. I think, again, as long as you get the right former players who know what they're going to be doing, who know how to coach, who know how to analyze the game, know how to talk about the game, I guess, translate it to the players, the younger players on the team. I think that's big. So as long as you get the right ones, I think that's great having former players on your staff. And I think players will probably like that a lot as well.
So I was just looking it up. So obviously Wikipedia can be wrong, but it looks like Richard Lewis doesn't have any coaching history. Bogans did or does have some with the New York Knicks organization as an assistant coach with their G League team, and then also for a year it looked like as an assistant coach with the actual New York Knicks. So Bogans has a little bit, Richard Lewis not as much.
Frank Isola got the
oh yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. That makes perfect sense, because he was like adamant that Bogans was getting it, and then he said Lewis was in talks or whatever. So that would make sense, yeah, with Isola. So you know, the other thing is we're going to see some different stuff on the sideline as well. I remember watching games last year, and assistant coach Rex Kalamian was always standing up. He was always right behind Dwayne Casey when the Pistons were on defense. Well, he's been overseas, I believe, coaching a national team, and I'm going to have to look that up because I've forgotten the country right now. I apologize. But it looks like, or sounds like, Jerome Allen is actually going to run the defense this upcoming season for the Pistons. So we've talked a lot about the Pistons switching everything and the pros and cons of that. I'm interested to see if we see a different defensive scheme from Jerome Allen compared to what we saw from coach Rex Kalamian.
And I'm going to throw this out there, and then we can wrap it up. This is completely out of left field. I'm completely swinging for the fences here, but I'm starting a conversation. That's all I'm doing by this. What if they're like kind of setting up the – I've said for a while now that I think Jerome Allen could be the successor to Dwayne Casey. What if they're kind of setting up the coaching staff now for maybe this is the last year for Dwayne Casey and Jerome Allen eventually takes over, and they're kind of setting up his coaching staff, how they like it and how they want it to be as they transition into the next phase of the coaching staff. Maybe that's the case. Maybe that could be what's happening.
Yeah, so I believe it's the Armenian national team for Coach Kalamian. But yeah, I think a lot of people, Pistons fans, would be excited about that with Jerome Allen if that was kind of what was going on here. And maybe some of these other guys, like you said, are positioning. So I've always said, like, I feel like Dwayne Casey is going to end up in the front office in some role. You know, like, you got John Beilein there that's working with player development. It sounds like, we've talked about it on the podcast, Koo, that Dwayne Casey is great at turning these young guys into professionals, right? We can sit here and talk all day about X's and O's and whether we think he's creative enough and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think either of us would say that having Dwayne Casey in your organization was a bad thing. I think we both think that would be a positive, especially if he was on the player development side in terms of Jay Nivey, I'm going to show you how to be a professional. Jalen Duren, who's the youngest player in the NBA, I'm going to help you become a professional and a grown man over the next 3 or 4 years. I think we both would agree that would be great value in this organization.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that a lot of fans as well don't look at, because it's not part of what you get to see on the court. It's not what they're watching every day. But part of getting drafted so young, part of their development is also simply becoming a grown man, like you mentioned. Like, that is a big part of it. The off the court stuff impacts players a lot on the court as well, their development. So a lot of guys that, you know, don't pan out and all that kind of things, a lot of them, you can trace it back to some of the things of they're off the court. How were they able to become grown men? They're professionals and stuff. I know a few players that have had that happen. So Dwayne Casey, I think that's, again, his biggest skill is taking these young men, taking these young players and turn them in not only into professionals, but grown adults, like taking them through that transition from childhood into legit adulthood and becoming professionals at one of the best sports and becoming one of the best players in their sport, I should say, in like a matter of months. Like, these guys are 5 years younger than me. Like, I consider myself young as hell, but these guys are all 5 years younger than me. They just got out of high school literally like a year and a half ago. Like, they're going from kids to adults. So along with having to learn how to play at a professional level, they're also having to figure out how to be grown men. And I think that's what Dwayne Casey really, really excels at. I think they would love to have that in their front office.
Well, think about that. We all grew up in college, right? I think about myself. I became like a man, I feel like, between my junior and senior year of college. And with all due credit to my head coach at American University, head coach Jeff Jones, you know, I grew up as he helped me grow up and turn into a man. Jalen Duren went to 1 year of college, and I'm sure Penny and Larry Brown and Sheed, they did as much as they could, but you have a kid for essentially 9 months. You know, you can make an impact, but they need those guys in the organization. And one more point on Jerome Allen, and I know it was brought up whenever he came over. He was with the Celtics, Coop,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
And he left the Celtics, who just played in the NBA Finals, that have two young stars, to come to the Detroit Pistons. You have to wonder if it was because he got passed up for that head coaching gig. And you know, you want to land somewhere, but you have to wonder, as you kind of connect the dots, was his thought process, hey, Dwayne Casey is this old, maybe you eventually will transition out and I can go there and be part of this?
No, yeah, I've said that for a while. When Jerome Allen was brought to the Pistons, it was considered a major get for the Pistons because he was one of the main assistant coaches on the market, one of the more popular ones that everyone was talking about was going to get interviews with the head coaching opportunities. So as soon as he signed with the Pistons, I've been saying it since then, and I'm going to continue saying it until I'm wrong or right, wrong or right, whichever one happens, that he was going to eventually be the successor to Dwayne Casey. We'll see how that goes and if that actually happens. If it's this year, next year, who knows? But overall, the signings, it sounds like of Rashard Lewis and Keith Bogans to the coaching staff, I think it's really good signings. I think it's good to have former players on the coaching staff as long as they know what they're doing. Those young players really need some guys that have went through it themselves and know how to get through it and grow up in the NBA.
One last thing, I promise I'll be super fast here. If you guys haven't read James Edwards, the third story about Rob Murphy in The Athletic, you guys need to go read it. The Motor City Cruise GM, Rob Murphy, James Edwards sat down, went through his whole story. It's an incredible story, incredible man, like what he's gone through, where he's gone, you know, persevered and where he's at now. I just wanted to give that shout out as we're talking about all these personnel within the Pistons organization. Rob Murphy, go read the article on The Athletic.
Yeah, and as you read it, just again, that's another—it's just another example of having these type of characters and these type of personalities in your front office, in your franchise. It does big things. You tell me that people, after you read that article, you can't tell me that players don't look at him with major respect and respect where he's come from and how he's got. Like, those kind of things matter. These kind of things matter. I'm telling you, they do.
And the ability to connect with certain players, Coop. Like, yep. No matter what. Like, at the end of the day, sometimes you need to be able to talk to and relate to someone that has been through what you've been through. And we know some of these NBA players, and in every aspect of life, have been through some of the stuff that Rob Murphy went through. And, you know, that's important for them, not as basketball players, but as just young men as well.
Absolutely. So I had a lot of fun recording this one, Bryce. I think we gave a lot of, you know, Dr. Phil speak on this one today.
Was that a ball joke, Coop?
No, it wasn't, but you threw it out there. So if anyone wants to take it as one, I won't take credit for it. Bryce can take credit for making fun of himself. But that's all we've got for you today. Make sure you guys go check out Bryce's podcast with Omari Sankofa II, The Pistons Pulse at the Detroit Free Press. Great stuff every Tuesday. You guys go check that out. Thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you are listening to this on. If you want to hear more from me and Bryce are on Twitter every Wednesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern time, recording in a Twitter spaces. Basically, you just come on, you join the spaces, you listen to stuff that we want to talk about. We'll have you up. You can get invited up to the stage, talk with us, ask us a question. Just some fun stuff we do every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. It's had some good turnouts over the past few weeks. If you guys just want some more content in this dead era or dead ball of August and the Pistons or the NBA offseason, really, not just the Pistons. You want to talk about some stuff, come join us over there. But until the next podcast, I'll see you guys later. Have a great day, everybody, and peace out.